Broadcasting from the United States Institute of Peace in Washington, D.C., welcome to The Peace Frequency, a podcast series searching for ways to create a world free of violent conflict and finding them in the stories of people across the globe who are making peace possible. I'm your host, Darren Cambridge. Joining me in the studio today for today's podcast is my guest, Aaron Schneier. He's the founder and executive director of Heartbeat, an organization that unites Israeli and Palestinian youth musicians to build critical understanding, develop creative nonviolent tools for social change, and amplify their voices to influence the world around them. Now, I'm going to tell you this. I have one of your albums. Everyone who's listening, you need to check out their music, and you can do that at their website at heartbeat.fm. You can also follow Heartbeat on Twitter at HeartbeatAmp. Again, that's at HeartbeatAmp. So, Aaron, thanks for being with us in the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm also joined in the studio by one of my USIP colleagues, Nate Wilson. He's a good man, and among doing many other things here at USIP, he also helps lead USIP's Arts and Culture Forum. So, Nate, thanks for co-hosting the show today.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
And actually, could you briefly tell us about the Arts and Culture Forum and like what it does here?
Sure. Essentially, the Arts and Culture Forum is a cross USIP initiative that tries to enhance and celebrate the work that we're doing using arts media for peace building purposes.
Wonderful. And I also want to extend a welcome to all of you who are listening online through the Peace Frequency webpage. Please send us your questions and comments during the show. You can post them on the forum space at the bottom of the Peace Frequency page. You can also tweet us your questions using the hashtag Peace Frequency. Again, that's hashtag Peace Frequency. So we're going to be talking about the power of music to transform conflict, the role of dialogue in bringing parties in conflict together, and the ways in which young people are putting themselves on the front lines of ending the decades-long Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So start sending us your questions now so we can bring them into the show. And when you do, please be sure to let us know from where in the world you are listening. With that, let's get into it. Now, Aaron, we start all of our podcasts with a behind the bio question. That's a question that in your response hopefully reveals something about your personality, your motivations, your character, inspirations, etc. Essentially, elements of who you are that we wouldn't be able to find out by looking at one of the bios that we find of you when we Google your name on the internet. And so Nate is going to start us off with our behind the bio question.
Great. And thanks a lot for being here, Aaron. Really appreciate it. And thanks to Darren, not only for letting me co-host, but also giving me this cool first question to you. So Aaron, if you and Heartbeat could go on a world tour with any artist or band, who would that artist or band be and why?
That's a really tough question. The list is really endless, I think. I think the top of the list today would be Beyoncé. I think today, of all the artists that I could think of, I think she's really using music in a powerful way to lift up voices that need to be heard. And also, I think her audience is really responsive to what she brings. I think you know, if we ever had that opportunity to tour with her, I think she could do an incredible service to raising up these voices of Israeli and Palestinian youth using music in their way to advocate for change.
Is there a specific Beyoncé song that you've been jamming to recently and you constantly see popping up on your playlist?
I'm enjoying the whole Lemonade album and music video. I think it's really a work of art.
Great. Nice. Beyoncé, if you're out there, give us a shout out.
Yes, that would be great. That would be great. Nate, I'm going to throw that to you as well. You know, leading the Arts and Culture Forum, spend some time thinking about this. If you could go on tour with any band or artist, who would that be?
Well, it would be a shame for whoever gets stuck with me on tour because I'm not much of a musician. But, you know, this is also somewhat current, but I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan. Mm. And it's interesting to me that Bob Dylan has talked about not only social change and things like that, but during his songs. But if you listen to some of his interviews, he actually says that, you know, you shouldn't listen to me outside of my songs and as an artist because I'm just a song and dance man. So what I have to say outside of that should be taken with a grain of salt which may be just Bob Dylan being himself and being, you know, outside of the box. But I like that because it sort of separates him from his music in some ways and leaves you with an air of mystery. So he's who I would go with, and I think it would be really interesting.
Nice. Beyonce and Bob Dylan. I like it. So, Aaron, you grew up here in Washington, D.C., yeah?
Yes.
In the area, yeah. And I've actually had the opportunity to meet your dad.
All right.
I think we were hanging out at American University, and I met your dad very briefly. And when I did, in that encounter, it became clear that you come from a social justice-oriented family. That was abundantly clear. So I'm wondering, what's one of the first memories from growing up where you realized that you were participating in some type of social justice work, organizing, or learning?
I can't remember how old I was. I could have been 11 or 14, in that ballpark, and I was encouraged to join my dad at a series of protests, and I forget now exactly what they were for. I think it was some policies at the World Bank or the IMF, or who knows what it was, but definitely some environmental things, and that was my first encounter with direct action. And you know, I grew up with stories of him, you know, getting arrested for a variety of causes, he's also a musician, so I definitely learned a lot from him about the role that music can play to build community and to advocate for justice and for peace. I think a really transformative experience for me was when I was a junior in high school. I joined a program here in D.C. called Operation Understanding, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which brings together Jewish and Black high school students to engage in a year-long journey, really, to understand racism, the history of racism, the experiences of both the African-American and the Jewish-American communities. And we went on a trip through really the whole country, but especially in the Deep South, learning about the legacy of slavery and segregation and the civil rights movement, and came back and were trained to become facilitators to run workshops in high schools and churches and synagogues around town. Mm-hmm. And really that year just opened my eyes up and really set me on this, I think lit a spark in me to say, like, this is something I can do, this work to fight racism and to be an activist in this way is really something I can do.
Yeah, I actually, back in the day, applied for a job with Operation Understanding. Yeah, did not get it, unfortunately. But
I missed out.
Yeah, I know. I certainly did. And I've met I've met a lot of people who have participated, and it, you know, everyone just raves about how much of a transformative experience it was for them. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that your dad is a musician, mm-hmm. and you, of course, are a musician. You're a singer. You're a songwriter. You play the guitar. And I recommend everyone who's listening to this podcast to check out Aaron's TEDx talk, which he opens with a song, so you can get a sense of his brilliance as a musician. And actually, we'll make a link to that available on the Peace Frequency webpage. But do you play any other instruments?
I play the bass guitar, and I play some hand percussion and some oud and other things that are similar to guitar, like stringed instruments. You know, mandolin, ukulele, these kind of things. But primarily guitar.
Okay. And now I'm always fascinated to hear people's first interaction with the guitar. When was the first time you picked it up and you started playing and you started thinking to yourself, yeah, I could go somewhere with this. I want to keep learning.
I think I was carrying a guitar since I was about 2 years old. I had my first real guitar, I think I was about 6, and I think I was in my first band when I was about 9.
Wow.
But it's always been something that I've you know, felt very strongly that I wanted to do. You know, I think it may have been listening to the Beatles as a kid, where I was just like mesmerized by them, and really just like, you know, it lit this this spark of imagination for me of like, what would that be like to be on stage, to have this experience. Mm. And through high school, you know, getting into bands and studying music more deeply, and being encouraged also just like finding my voice and finding this gift of music, I really it's something addictive, really. I think once one gets into this, it's really hard to let go of it.
Yeah. you mentioned the Beatles, mm-hmm. and for me too, when I started playing the guitar, the Beatles and an anthology and all the tablature and learning those songs, mm-hmm. they're very accessible to a lot of people because they're pretty simple songs, but they're mm-hmm. beautiful and amazing mm-hmm. and fun to play. Is there a particular Beatles song musically and lyrically that really spoke to you or that you found yourself playing a lot? And maybe not even Beatles songs. I guess we can broaden the question to, is there a song that over the years you found yourself always playing? When you pick up your guitar, it's one of the first tunes that you start strumming and you keep going back to.
Wow. I think the first one that comes to mind, there's so many, but the first one that comes to mind is, what's the song called? It goes, when I wake up early in the morning. That song.
I know that song, yeah.
This one, I think it just got such a good beat, good hook. It's just like so catchy, and the guitar part's really fun. I often go to that one. I mean, in general, lately I've been really, really just in love with Brazilian music. And so there's the music of Caetano Veloso in particular, which, you know, he's also an amazing activist and has done incredible things with music to you know, promote social change and fight oppression, really, in his country. So I'm still trying to get my hands around the Brazilian style, you know, the samba, bossa nova stuff.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic and a good segue, because we're going to get into the origins of Heartbeat in a minute, but there must have been some influencing factors that led to the formation of Heartbeat that made you sort of recognize the power of music, not only your enjoyment of it, but its possibilities of making change. So for you, where does the power of music lie? And then, you know, who are some artists historically maybe, or what are some songs that have influenced your understanding of music as a powerful force for peace?
Well, I think really I'm still amazed. Like every few days I hit this, you know, it hits me again how powerful music is. And I'm just enjoying so much learning about music's power. I think among many things, I think one of the most powerful things, hard to choose one, just one to talk about, but I think one of the most powerful things about music is its ability to cut to the core and reach people at their heart. I think a lot of times in the public sphere, you know, if it's the news or if it's politicians or whomever, it's like assaulting our brains in trying to rationalize, you know, and force us to think and push us to think in certain ways, which is great. But I also think music can accomplish those things of conveying ideas and teaching in that way, but also can open up the heart so that people are actually ready to listen and ready to engage with new ideas and with other people that they otherwise wouldn't deal with. I'll start the answer that way. In terms of musicians that I've really been inspired by the way they use music, I mean, the list is endless. I think, for one, I think Benny Goodman, the jazz clarinet player, doesn't necessarily get enough credit these days. As I understand, and maybe this may be incomplete information, but as I understand, he was the first white artist to perform with integrated black and white bands.
Okay.
And this is, I think, at a time when, you know, we're still deep in segregation here in the United States, and he really was really at the forefront of politics. Like, you know, I think culture in this way has shown us that like through the arts, we can really push society and push eventually politics to shift. And I think Benny Goodman deserves a big credit for that. Other artists like Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger too. The way that they traveled the country and really listened to people and brought their stories into their songs, I think is something that I'm personally missing from the current generation of artists. Maybe I know there are people doing that work, but I wish they were as well known as those two were in their day. The list goes on. I really think, you know, in so many countries, like Miriam Makeba, the way she used music to educate the world about apartheid and advocate for the end of apartheid, or Bob Marley, how he's really just been this voice around the world, and also in Jamaica to heal the racial divides in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. You know, the list goes on and on. John Lennon, you know, I think, you know, it's something that I'm really curious to understand more. Like, where would we be as a society without these people? And do we really have enough of these voices today? Like, you know, are we really taking advantage of music's power today?
Great questions.
You know what we need to do? We need to make a playlist. Find some of the music videos or something on YouTube where they're freely available and you know, post them at the bottom of this podcast, because I think folks have heard of some of the artists that you mentioned, but maybe not, they haven't heard of those folks in the context in which you've mentioned them. Mm-hmm. And then I think you mentioned some folks that some of our listeners maybe have never heard of. So I think it'd be cool to kind of get a list of these artists and make a playlist that hopefully we can make available on this. That would be a good idea. You also you mentioned Woody Guthrie, and you have a young son, 2.5, right?
Yes.
I'm 2.5. At some point, I assume he's going to learn "This Land Is Your Land." My daughter learned it in school last year, so she was about 3.5 last year. And one of the most powerful moments I've had with her is her coming home, explaining to me that they're learning the song. And I said, "Well, look, I'll learn how to play it on the guitar. Let's get the lyrics out, and let's get all of the lyrics out."
Yes.
Because most schools, they don't teach all of that song, and so it can be misconstrued in terms of the message that it's trying to deliver. Mm-hmm. And I specifically remember it was a cold winter night. We were just sitting in front of the fire in my house, singing, playing the guitar, and reading and then singing all of the lyrics of all the verses and talking about it. And she was 3.5. And this idea of, like, seeing the sign that says no trespassing, or seeing people, you know, in a food line, and, you know, how that is a sign of, like, oppression or injustice. She got it, or to a certain extent, you know? And so I love that song. I recognize that it's a song that is misunderstood by a lot of people, but I love it because it's a great melody. It's got a great message. And I think it is accessible to even a 3.5-year-old, like the full message of it.
And sometimes that's the great thing about youth, is that they know things that we as adults, as you were mentioning earlier, Aaron, people whose brains are assaulted every day with more information and so on and so forth, that we've forgotten over time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, Aaron, you've also been a dialogue facilitator. So you're a musician, but you're also a dialogue facilitator, and you've done dialogue for facilitation for a number of well-known organizations like Seeds of Peace. I would love to hear how you define dialogue, either its intention, process, or both.
I think it's a really interesting question. I think what I've really learned from my teachers in this is you know, the first role of dialogue is to really create a space, an equal space, where people can be heard, where every participant can be heard. And in fact, when we were starting Heartbeat, that was like the advice I got. It was like, just make sure everyone's heard and everything will be fine. And I think there's some truth in that. I think, you know, I think the role of a facilitator often is to help raise up some of those things that participants may have inside them, but they're not yet elevated to the surface, and both internally for them and maybe just for the group. And I think that's really the core of it, is creating the space based on equality, which is often difficult to achieve if we're working in conflict settings where there are, you know, more powerful sides and less powerful. But I really think that by creating that safe space of equality and then making sure that everyone's voices are heard, that so much can come from that. There's, you know, for us in Heartbeat, our emphasis is on dialogue for really building critical understanding and building empathy. I think the empathy comes naturally over time, just being around people long enough and having meaningful interactions and like healthy interactions. But the critical understanding piece of really becoming more aware of what's happening in reality, there's a really powerful role that dialogue has that I think other forms of education or media can't achieve, of really empowering the participants to inform each other's opinions and to help participants also define their own understandings for themselves, to ask tough questions, to really just become more aware of who they are and how they fit into society. I'm a big fan of dialogue, if you couldn't tell.
Yes. Yeah. Do you remember who gave you that advice about who said just make sure everyone is heard?
Yes. Len Traubman. Len and Libby Traubman are the founders of the Jewish Palestinian Living Room Dialogues based in San Mateo, California. And they've done incredible work over the last 30, maybe 40 years, leading dialogues really all around the world and inspiring people to start dialogue projects and really creating this, emphasizing a compassionate listening space where it's really about, it's not about right and wrong, it's not about winning an argument, it's really about how do we create a space where we can be heard. In fact, another thing that I've learned from them is this teaching that an enemy is someone whose story we haven't heard. And for my work in Heartbeat and doing this, I really believe that. I think once we really understand where someone's coming from, we understand what they've been through, it's nearly impossible to consider them an enemy. Mm-hmm.
You are listening to The Peace Frequency, a podcast series searching for ways to create a world free of violent conflict and finding them in the stories of people across the globe who are making peace possible. I'm your host, Darren Cambridge, and I'm speaking today with Aaron Schneier. He is the founder and executive director of Heartbeat, an organization that unites Israeli and Palestinian youth musicians to build critical understanding, develop creative nonviolent tools for social change, and amplify their voices to influence the world around them. I'm also joined in studio by my USIP colleague, Nate Wilson, who helps lead USIP's Arts and Culture Forum. Those of you who are listening to us live right now, send us your questions and comments. You can post them in the forum space at the bottom of the Peace Frequency page, or you can tweet us your question using the hashtag Peace Frequency.
Great. Thanks, Darren. Aaron, those were great thoughts about dialogue and sort of set us up for this next section. Maybe you could take us back to 2006 when, as a Fulbright MTVU fellow, you started building what has since become Heartbeat. So going into this fellowship, you clearly embraced the idea that music can play a key role in conflict. What role do you see music playing, good or bad, in the midst of a conflict?
I think we can look around the world and there's so many examples, both for good and for bad. I think, sadly, there's many examples of how music has been used to mobilize people to commit acts of violence, mm-hmm. or even acts of genocide. And similarly, there's been countless examples of how music has been used to mobilize people to come together, to stand up in nonviolent ways. And it's, I think, given incredible strength to nonviolent movements for justice and for peace. I think music can play so many different roles. It can be a diffuser of tension. It can be a instigator of tension, but also of nonviolent conflict, of in a way, a positive conflict. Mm-hmm. And I think within our context and starting Heartbeat, there have been many, many examples of efforts to use music to heal and to create change in Israel and Palestine. A number of musicians have really been activists through their music, like David Broza and Mira Awad, and really many, many, many artists have done what they can. Often they get a lot of criticism. Maybe someone didn't think they should have done that or done this. But what I see is that they really follow their hearts and do what they believe is right and stand up for what they believe. And beyond them, there also have been many not many, but a handful of organizations using music to bring together youth, primarily really only through classical music until Heartbeat came around. There was a number of orchestras, youth orchestras, and like Daniel Barenboim and the West East Divan Orchestra, which has done incredible things, also through classical music. And this is now in 2007, looking at this landscape, and really I felt that popular music, especially with youth, had not been tapped into. You know, kids love hip hop, and they love also the folk music of the region. You know, if it's
absolutely,
you know, the classical Arabic music, and the folk music of, you know, also the rock and the jazz that kids are listening to. And I wanted to create a space where kids could engage with one another through the music they really love, where they can also write their own music, rather than reading someone else's music and learning to play in an orchestra, which is also a really powerful experience, but to also bring their own understandings and their own opinions to their music, and to try to amplify that, to bring those ideas to their communities. And really I went into this more of an intuition that this is something that needs to be done and something that can be powerful, and wanted to learn.
It's definitely an unusual idea, and interesting too. So maybe you could tell us just a little bit of functionality about how a Fulbright MTV Youth Fellowship actually works, and how you learned about this opportunity.
Yeah, I was I had been working in Jerusalem with Seeds of Peace, and it was like a 5-month position I had there. And
just for our listeners, what is Seeds of Peace?
It's an organization that brings together youth leaders from many different conflict regions, from the Middle East, from India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, formerly from the Balkans and from Cyprus. And the beginning of their program, they bring the youth to a camp in Maine, where they spend 3 weeks going through an intensive conflict resolution program, living together, engaging in dialogue together. It's really a transformational experience for many of them. And when they go home, the organization continues to build connections and opportunities for them to really embrace their capacity as leaders. And so I was working in Israel and Palestine with the campers who had then returned home to try to support them in their ongoing efforts. But my position at the time there was coming to an end, and I was like, what's next? And I was like, oh, maybe I'll apply for a Fulbright. I go on the website, and they had just announced this Fulbright MTVU fellowship to study the power of music to build mutual understanding. I kind of fell out of my chair, and I think I had about 2 weeks until the deadline to apply, and scrambled to get an application together. And thankfully they chose me. It's you know, it's been an amazing gift of like a kickstart to this whole effort. And the way it works is essentially a Fulbright award. So I think in general it's about 9 months that there's a living stipend and support to live in another country, as other Fulbrighters do, to go and build mutual understanding between the United States and whatever other country we get sent to. And the added element of MTVU, of course, the project had to be focused on music and music's power to build mutual understanding. But MTVU also provided a great camera and a lot of, at the time we were still using film, like hundreds of tape cassettes to record film
with,
and recording equipment and a platform on their website to show what I was doing to the world. You know, I think, and also some training in how to use all those things.
very important.
And you know, thankfully, I also was able to leverage the name, you know, of MTV to get kids excited in this project. Because as you can imagine, you know, to cross these barriers and to engage with the supposed enemy is very much against the status quo and very much not what other teenagers are doing. So being able to go to musicians on the two sides and say, you know, we have the support of MTVU. People are paying attention to what you're doing. This is a really exciting opportunity for you, just as a musician, even if not as some sort of young activist, but really on the music end, they were really excited by that. And so I went, you know, ended up being a little longer than 9 months, maybe 10 months as part of the fellowship. And, you know, we got it going.
You know, it sounds like having the MTV name helped a little bit with the legitimacy of what you're doing and the excitement around it. Could you tell us more about those early days when you first started inviting students, Israelis and Palestinians, to be a part of this nascent project of yours? What were some of the challenges that you faced as you were trying to figure out exactly what you're doing and while at the same time inviting these young people to be a part of it?
Yeah, great question. Recruitment for our programs continues to be a big challenge. It's difficult to find young people who are willing to commit and engage in something, you know, at least a year long, if not longer. And as I said, something that's really against the grain of what their peers are doing. But that said, I mean, it just takes a big effort. It's totally possible, and you know, we make it work. And in that first year, I basically went to every school I could get access to in Jerusalem, East and West Jerusalem, and met with the principals and tried to get access to their musicians. And on both sides, many schools were really receptive. The principals were like, yes, we totally support this. And they, you know, had introductory meetings. I could like meet during lunch with the musicians, or I could go to the music class if they had one and give a presentation. And there was a lot of, you know, positive, you know, reception to this project from both sides. Of course, there was a huge challenge because on the West Jerusalem, on the Jewish-Israeli side, there's a number of music programs, like after-school programs, like conservatories also. And for the most part, they were supportive and allowed me to go straight to their musicians. Like, this is the easiest way to find musicians. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, on the Palestinian side, there was at the time just one music conservatory in East Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And I went and met with them, and they felt strongly that until the occupation ends, that they can't support any projects that bring together Israelis and Palestinians, you know, for something social and something friendly, as they saw it, because they really felt that these efforts could normalize the status quo and reinforce the inequalities that exist in society and reinforce the occupation. So I tried to convince them that our intention is not to create some sort of happy, you know, let's just get together, hold hands and sing peace songs kind of experience, but really the idea is to create a space where the young people will build understanding about what's going on, and where they can use music and use this platform to educate people, you know, on the other side, around the world, in their own communities about what they believe. It's really about amplifying these young people's voices and not about presenting any false picture of, of peace or equality that exists today. Really about, you know, pushing for these things in the future. Unfortunately, they refused to work with me, and that really threw me for a loop. I didn't want to do anything that would hurt the Palestinian cause or would threaten their own, you know, the needs that the Palestinian community has. So I slowed down and I tried to. I really wrestled with, like, is this the right thing to do? Is this the right way to move forward? And I talked to a lot of Palestinian friends who were like, go for it. Don't stop. Like, this is needed. And based on their advice, I went forward.
You're listening to The Peace Frequency, a podcast series searching for ways to create a world free of violent conflict and finding them in the stories of people across the globe who are making peace possible. I'm your host, Darren Cambridge, and today I'm speaking with Aaron Schneier. He's the founder and executive director of Heartbeat, an organization that unites Israeli and Palestinian youth musicians to build critical understanding, develop creative nonviolent tools for social change, and amplify their voices to influence the world around them. I'm also joined in the studio by my USIP colleague, Nate Wilson, who helps lead USIP's Arts and Culture Forum. Those of you who are listening to us now live, you can send us your questions and comments, post them in the forum at the space at the bottom of the Peace Frequency webpage where you're listening to us now, or you can tweet us your questions using the hashtag Peace Frequency. So, Aaron, you know, you describe and Heartbeat describes itself as an organization, as I just said, that builds critical understanding. You just talked about this, develops creative nonviolent tools for social change. You spoke about this as well, and this idea of amplifying the voices of the young people who are part of Heartbeat so that they can influence the world around them. Let's explore how music specifically does each one of those, because one thing that I was thinking about as you talked about those initial challenges or the initial attempts to do outreach and recruit young people to be part of it, I kept thinking to myself, would students and young people and schools have jumped at this opportunity had music not been part of it? If it were dialogue but without the music component. Mm-hmm. And so I really want to take a look at how music specifically you think does each one of these. So let's build with critical understanding. And, you know, through reading your website, I know there's a specific concept that you have, an idea around what you mean by critical understanding. And what is that, and how does music do that for you?
Well, for us, the critical element is really about encouraging our participants to think critically, to ask tough questions, to challenge their assumptions and the narratives that they've been taught, and really just to ask questions. And from that questioning process to come to new truths. And it also for us is, it's a nod to the work of Paulo Freire and his work around building critical consciousness. That this is really a fundamental need in order to lift societies from oppression and to empower also the oppressed. That this process of building critical consciousness is deeply needed. So I think for us, music, it's an interesting question. I think a lot of that building of critical consciousness for us comes through dialogue and through field trips and experiential learning, where our musicians are really learning from each other, where the knowledge that they're gaining is coming from one another. Like, our job as facilitators is to create some space, you know, to set the table in a way, and then they bring the food. And also an idea that was taught to me from a great teacher. But really for them to be able to build this critical consciousness from amongst each other. And then the music, in a way, is the product of that. It's what they can then tap into as a means to share this, to, like, in a way, like, define for themselves what they believe and what they want to share, and then to have it heard by potentially millions of people. I think in a similar way as you were talking about with your daughter learning This Land Is Our Land song, I think we also have this really exciting process of going back and forth between dialogue and music. So often, you know, we'll have some dialogue, we'll see it, we'll have, watch a film, or we'll go on a field trip, and then we'll dialogue about that, and then we'll write songs based on those experiences. And sometimes we'll like write some lyrics, and then we'll look at those lyrics really closely and dialogue about those lyrics. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you saying? Do I agree with what you're saying? Do I feel comfortable, you know, playing bass while you say that on stage? Mm-hmm. And through the music, a lot of, I think, really profound questions come out, and that back and forth, I think, really strengthens that process of building critical understanding.
Yeah, I'm going to make a somewhat odd movie reference here, but there's a great movie called White Men Can't Jump.
Okay.
That stars another famous Woody Harrelson, and alongside Wesley Snipes. I'm not going to go into the whole plot of it, but there's a scene in the movie where Woody Harrelson, who's white, is driving in a car with Wesley Snipes, who's black, and they're listening to Jimi Hendrix. Mm-hmm. And both of them are really into Jimi Hendrix. And Wesley Snipes turns to Woody Harrelson and says, "You're into Jimi Hendrix?" And Woody Harrelson's like, "Yeah, man, Jimi Hendrix is great. I love listening to his music." And Wesley Snipes says, "See, that's the problem with you is that y'all listen to Jimi, but you can't hear Jimi Hendrix." And he draws this distinction between listening and hearing. And so the whole point of this movie reference is, as I was listening to you talk about how music influences the dialogue process and what the dialogue process is for you, that music is an experience where it really taps into all the different ways in which you can listen and then hear somebody. So if you're just talking with somebody in an exchange, that's just like one level of vocal speech. But when you add a melody to it, you add a rhythm to it that you yourself are helping create, you actually oftentimes add body motion to it as well. If you're dancing or moving, there are all these extra layers of what you're listening to that's coming from somebody. Mm-hmm. And I think it makes the ability to develop that critical consciousness, by hearing someone else's consciousness or their own narrative, their own stories you talked about earlier, when you add all those layers that music creates in that space, it helps people, I think, move from that listening to that hearing. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, like you said, and it sounds like Heartbeat is an example of this, makes the dialogue work that much more effective. Right. Or the skills that people need to have as listeners, as people who are able to hear somebody who has a different perspective and a different consciousness. They've been trained in many ways through the music to be able to do that more effectively.
I think that's right on. I think that's one of the big learnings I've had in these past 9 years about music's power is just as you said. I think because our musicians, I think looking around at other programs that do dialogue work in Israel and Palestine, many people who've experienced our programs and experienced other programs, they see that our musicians are like remarkably more connected, like for a long term, for the long term. And the question is why. And I think a big part of the reason is because, many other programs set up, the Israeli kids as a delegation, the Palestinian kids as a delegation, and then, they try to win dialogue. Mm-hmm. And because of the music, because of the need to work together to create good music, they have to listen to one another, like you said. They have to really respect one another and make space for one another. They really have to be responsible to one another. Mm-hmm. And those skills that come out of creating the music are then, they're brought straight into the dialogue without the groups realizing that they're doing it. But I definitely think that because of their experience with music, the dialogues can be a lot richer.
Mm. You also talk about developing creative, nonviolent tools for social change. What are some of those tools that have been developed, and how has music provided the spaces, the ideas, the opportunities for the creation and the use of those nonviolent tools?
Yeah, I mean, I think the primary tool, the nonviolent tool we're talking about, is music. I think many of our musicians come in, understanding music as something that's fun, something that feels good to do, maybe something they aspire to get on stage and rock out and all those things. But then through Heartbeat, they realize that music can be a tool for social change and can advocate for things in a nonviolent way. And essentially, what we've done so far, we organize concerts for our musicians to share their music with their communities.
Right.
We record their music and put out CDs and EPs and singles to try to broadcast this music as widely as possible. And we make music videos also to try to reach as many people as possible. I think there's a lot more we can do. Of course, because we're working primarily with high school students, there's a limit to how much risk we want them to take. But especially as you know, we also have a thriving graduate community that's, you know, these are now professional artists, young adults who are using music in really courageous ways. And so I think it's there's a lot of room to grow in that area.
And then amplifying youth voices to influence the world around them. How have the youth, some of these graduates that you've just talked about that have been involved with Heartbeat, how have they been able to transform elements of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
I think the biggest shift that we're seeing, and it's, I think we'll talk about it more in a little bit, but about in terms of the larger Israeli-Palestinian conflict, I think sadly there are very few spaces where Israelis and Palestinians can come together as equals. And although our groups are still relatively small, we only have about 40 active musicians in our community, and even at our concerts, you know, we're reaching, you know, just within the thousands of people each year. I think those spaces are transformational in their own ways of of creating a space of equality in this sea, really, of inequality and division between the two sides. And although that's it, although, you know, we're not by any means reaching the critical mass that we need to, I think this is a beginning. I think our hope is just to grow these efforts.
I thought it was really interesting what you were talking about earlier, the way that, you know, you have a dialogue and then there's also sort of a creative element to it. And so when people are making music, it's not only creating different narratives, it's also sort of technical too. So you kind of get away from the sort of emotional strain that dialogues can have on people. But I'm also curious, when the youth and the music they've created together, how has this shifted some of the dominant narratives around the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, whether it's just within the group or, you know, you talk with people who've listened to the music afterwards?
Well, certainly within the group, for our musicians, the process they go through is really transformational. Most have never had an experience of meeting the other side, you know, someone from the other side. And they've rarely had any, you know, anyone question, you know, their narratives or what they've been taught, you know, in school or at home. And I think just being exposed to this or these various other truths is really eye-opening for our musicians. You know, I think so many of them, that's it. I think they leave their first couple years of Heartbeat in high school already just like asking a lot of questions. If they're Israelis, going to the army becomes something extremely complicated, whereas before, you know, it may have been a no-brainer.
Right.
And for Palestinians, you know, also I think there's this big question of what is my role in society. And now that I understand more of how things are working and how other people perceive what's going on, it really forces them to reflect on what are the actions, what are the steps I'm taking in my life, and am I doing things in the most responsible way possible. And I think also in, you know, in their immediate circles, I think amongst their family members and friends,
right,
their experiences, the Heartbeat musicians' experiences, have also influenced a lot of their family and friends. Whether it's, you know, classmates who previously would just like spout out racist, you know, the only good Arab is a dead Arab kind of stuff, or other terrible things like this, you know, and then they get confronted by one of our musicians who says, "Hey, man, that's, that sounds disgusting." And
that's me and my family you're talking
right,
about. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, yeah. And I think the spaces that open up through those conversations do really push classmates and family members to question their own stereotypes, their own, you know, perceptions of the other, and And we're seeing that ripple effect. I think in terms of the larger audiences, there's something that's really much harder to gauge. Probably millions of people have heard the music of heartbeat musicians around the world. And unfortunately, it's really difficult to understand what impact that's having on them. Like, how deeply can we transform someone's attitudes or behaviors with listening to a song for 3 minutes? And I know for myself that's certainly possible. But I think it is a big question. And I think the answer partly is like somehow increase the frequency of those songs in society so that whatever impact that does come from those 3 minutes doesn't fade away after a week or 6 months, but that where these messages and these values are still being promoted really through pop culture in a consistent way. But that said, you know, at concerts, we do have audience members who come up to us and they say, I've never met someone from the other side who truly believes in peace and justice, or, you know, who I really feel understands my narrative. And just from hearing you tonight, you really transformed the way I see the entire conflict.
Yeah.
So we do get these really powerful stories from audiences from time to time.
Absolutely. And this is a similar question, but go with me here. So
sure.
How do these narratives and ideas that are expressed through the music of the Palestinian-Israeli youth differ from the older people and political leaders? For example, one of your musicians on your website told a story about how he had received a letter from John Kerry, and John Kerry had described peace in the Middle East as a dream. And his response to this was, quote, I don't believe it is a dream. I believe it is a very, very reachable reality. To me, the current situation is a nightmare, and we all need all we need to do is wake up. It's not about dreaming. It's about stopping living this nightmare.
Yeah. I think the reality is that so many Israelis and Palestinians disagree with their leaders and feel stuck with the options that exist. I think our musicians share those feelings.
Right.
And each, of course, has different opinions. And really, I think amongst our musicians, we see people from all political opinions and all backgrounds. So one thing I think that's uniform across the board with our musicians is this frustration that our leaders, this is both, you know, the Israeli and Palestinian leaders, but also here in the States and around the world, are stuck in this debate of essentially, I'm right and you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one truth. And if you don't buy into this truth, then you're evil. And I think our musicians, as young people, are sick of that. They understand, I think, especially from their experience in Heartbeat, they understand the fact that there are multiple truths. And the fact that just because someone has a different perspective doesn't mean that they are inherently evil. And our musicians, they really value the humility that comes with asking questions and recognizing that none of us have all the answers. And they also recognize that there's something really powerful that happens when you get a diverse set of opinions in a room together, that a much better idea can come out of those ideas. And I think often that's what comes out in their music, is like this call to their leaders to stop being so arrogant and hateful, really.
Important foundations for peace, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're listening to The Peace Frequency, a podcast series searching for ways to create a world free of violent conflict and finding them in the stories of people across the globe who are making peace possible. I'm your host, Darren Cambridge. We're speaking today with Aaron Schneier. He's the founder and executive director of Heartbeat, an organization that unites Israeli and Palestinian youth musicians to build critical understanding, develop creative, nonviolent tools for social change, and amplify their voices to influence the world around them. I'm also joined in the studio by my USIP colleague, Nate Wilson, who helps lead USIP's Arts and Culture Forum. He's co-hosting the show today with me. And those of you who are listening, send us your questions and comments. You can post them in the forum space at the bottom of the Peace Frequency webpage where you're listening to us now, or you can tweet us your questions using the hashtag peace frequency. You mentioned earlier, Aaron, that you know you want to increase the frequency at which this music that you've been creating with these young people gets around the world and people hear it. I want to try and do that right now. I'm going to bring in one of the songs here, which will be a nice segue into the experience specifically of some of the youth. So I'm going to play a song, and then you can tell us a little bit about how it came to be created. So let's see if this works.
All right.
Yeah. Salam. Shalom. Peace.
بنتوصل للجذب تكونش خايف مين انا شوز الراب هب انا بنحبس انا زي ما انا ما بتغير ولا بنفس تتغير معي بتغير معك تأذيني ما بنساك عندي حياة لازم اعيشها بعيد عن بلاك هي محسيبك من طريق الزيت من المأساة كل انا شايفه واقف ضدي مش قادر انسى
راك ما بتهود ما بتيغي يا في رياح راك يتزف ود اتزف دماء في او دماء يوتر من داي ترامود يشاروا تميد وتم اناشيم يوضا نشاكي مشانيم انت تدميد الوين تصبير لي على ما اني مستكل لما اناشيم مخبدين اخ ممشيخين لشكر למה כל תשובה רק מבלבלת יותר חי בלי הסבר ברור ומנסה להתגבר
Jeder Bauarbeit, man erntet das, was man sät. Darum wollen wir, dass sie eben gut geht. Unser Prinzip heißt Mensch, also denke daran, dass jeder mit mir die Welt verändern kann. Wer bestimmt die Realität, wer bestimmt, wie es ist? Fragst du dich, wie es anders geht, ob es bleibt, wie es ist? Wie sieht die Welt aus, drin und raus, okay? Ich frage mich, welche Antwort ich daraus sehe. Ich verändere mich täglich, denn ich beweg mich, anders zu sein, als ich bin. Nein, das geht nicht, ich gebe Respekt. Wenn du mir Respekt gibst, dann gibt es auch kein Friss oder Stopp. Denn wir wollen die Dinge selbst in die Hand nehmen, die Lösung der Probleme selbst in die Hand nehmen, Position beziehen und dann dafür einstehen, zusammenhalten.
Okay, so tell us about that song. What is it called? What is it about? And how did the young people involved in Heartbeat come to create this?
So the song's called Boom Boom Boom. It's actually, the original version is like 9 minutes long because this was the, in a way, the central piece of a week-long, well, actually it's a few weeks, an exchange program that we did between our Israeli and Palestinian youth musicians and German artists as well. And so they came over to Jerusalem for a week and then we all went to Berlin for a week and there was a bunch of workshops in between and before that. And the project was called the Hip Hop Hudna, the Hip Hop Ceasefire. And I think really the intention of this song is boom, 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 like violence. We don't want any more of this. And that chorus, that hook, was written by two of our musicians. Basically, I said they had been writing like a series of different songs over these 2 weeks together. And some songs featured this group of people and that pair of people, and we really encouraged everyone to like write songs and bring it, and we kind of whipped together some productions and created this album in a very short time. And I wanted one song, we all wanted one song that everyone could participate in, and so these two guys in the group came up with that hook and went around you know, essentially with that chord progression and just sat like and played it for people as they, like each vocalist in the group then wrote their own piece on top of that with that general theme of like, we're tired of violence. You know, I think, yeah, again, I think a lot of those, you know, each artist took it in their own direction. But really the intention is to show this really unified call of like young people from really everywhere in the world are tired of this. And really demand something different, and then we smushed it all together, and it became like a 9 minute song.
That was rocking. I liked it.
Yeah, yeah. I Aaron, when you first gave me that album, you know, in CD form, which is kind of old school these days.
Yeah. It was a while back.
CD
huh?
Nice.
Yeah. No, I blasted that song and many others on that album in my car for many weeks that followed.
Nice. And yeah, these stories about the how it happened was really interesting. But I'm curious, how does language factor into Heartbeat's activities? Most Palestinians in Israel know Hebrew, but my understanding is that many Jewish Israelis don't know Arabic. So how does that factor in?
Yeah, it's a challenge for sure. Some of our programs have emphasized English as the dominant language, in some way as a neutral language. I think the more, you know, as the years have progressed, we really feel more strongly, and we've actually just recently made like a policy shift in the organization to like on purpose or really, really intentionally encourage that we only use Arabic and Hebrew in our dialogues and our sessions. Mm. Which does require more translation. We've always translated for those who want to speak whatever language they feel most comfortable, and of course, take the time that's needed to make sure everyone feels heard and
right.
and that everyone is hearing each other. But I think the reality is there is an inequality in these groups where many of our, like almost all of the participants speak some Hebrew.
Right.
Or speak very good Hebrew. The Palestinians from East Jerusalem that we work with don't often speak Hebrew. But in any case, we really want to, even if some groups can get by just speaking Hebrew, we really want to emphasize an equality between the two languages. So it's going to take time to translate, and it mm-hmm. may slow some things down, but I think overall it'll bring a lot more depth to the experience.
Absolutely. And what happens when they go back to their homes, to their environment? I mean, have you heard stories of backlash? Do they share what they've experienced? Is that part of the program? And then how does the experience impact people and their families, mm-hmm. neighborhoods? I mean, you said that the wider society, we need more time and probably more money repetition. But are there any red lines that they have to navigate, for example?
Sure. Most of our participants have a lot of support from their families. As high school students, it would be very hard to participate without that.
Right.
That said, there's, you know, they're also greeted with some skepticism from some members in their families and in their communities. I think, as I touched on earlier, there are countless cases where our musicians have succeeded to positively influence how members in their family or societies view the other and can essentially build allies to our effort. Mm-hmm. There are, of course, sadly, some cases where we've lost musicians on both sides. About a year ago, amidst the upsurge in violence, there was one participant, and he had been coming to our programs for a year or so, and it really felt like the Heartbeat experience was his space to experience freedom, and was very engaged and very, very committed to the work. And with the upsurge in violence, there was like daily clashes with the police, the army in his neighborhood, and his friends were throwing, you know, stones or Molotov cocktails, and like it was kind of this you know, a lot of pressure from people in his community to stop coming to Heartbeat, to say, this is not the time to engage with the other side. And, you know, it's just not appropriate. We just don't feel it's appropriate. And actually, for some time, he came in secret. And eventually, you know, people in his community learned about it, and he had to stop coming, which was really heartbreaking for him and for the other members of the group.
Yeah.
And around the same period of time, we had a Jewish Israeli participant who, in my understanding, was receiving pressure from his father to stop coming, and kind of was getting fed these ideas that you can't go on this retreat. If you do, you know, don't sleep because you might get stabbed while you're sleeping. And I think those, you know, those pressures really do take a toll on our participants, and it makes it hard for a handful of them to participate. Although the majority do receive a lot of support, I think, from their families and society members.
Well, I'd love to hear more about some of the experiences that the youth face going through the program, and I'd love to do it again through a song. So I'll play another one, and then you can tell us how this one came to be.
We were no more walls, but we were mountains, branches. We were no more gas, which on the poor and the rich. No more of the races, clenches, switches. The major key to our
misery. Salamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, habibi.
Ma kul yom.
Oh,
zay, salam. انا عندي حلم ما اقدر اغير السيستم شوفوا هالفيلم حياتنا قاعده بترسم بطلنا نتمتم حياتنا مش راح نسلم بنرفع اصبعنا الوطني لكل الحكم شو بده يصير لو كلنا بطلنا نستعمل السلاح شو بده يصير لو كلنا عشنا هون في سلام اتكبت ايدي نفسي دم من كل الجيوش وطهر العالم من الاوغاد بالوحوش مشاكل من كل شكل ملفوفه حولنا نخصم حامل بيدي كفيه بدعي ربي جيب النصر جيجي الاستقلال ونحرر للبلاد ندمر الحواجز ونهد الجدار واقدر ارجع اقعد بالارض بعد سيدي انا جيتي وهذه هي بلادي مش رح اطلع من هنا حتى لو على جوزتي اطلع صوتي سلامتك كل اخواتي
we want no more walls but we want bridges we want no more gaps between the poor and the rich no more of the races claim shares wish it made your key to set us free
כל היום אני מביט בחלון ומבין שמה שלא שלי ומה שלי שלך אנחנו אמורים להיות בכלל אחים וזה לא נראה לי שזה בכלל אכפת לך נשבור את החומות נורים את הדגלים ואז נגלה עולם שבו הכל יכול לקרות ושנבין שכולנו בני אדם ואז לנצח נצח אם אנחנו נוכל לחיות.
Okay, so tell us about that song.
Again, this song is part of that hip-hop Hoodna project, and it started in the basement of the center where we work in Jerusalem, in the neighborhood of Abu Tor, which is right on the border of East and West Jerusalem, with this amazing view looking out to the Old City and looking out to the Mount of Olives across the valley. So we're down in the basement, and the female vocalist that you'd heard in the beginning of the song, she came up with this chorus, you know, we don't know, what is it? We don't want no more walls, what we want is bridges. Mm-hmm. We don't want no more gaps between the poor and the riches. We had to rhyme it. And
close enough.
Yeah. And, you know, that kind of served as the inspiration for the song. Tracked her song, tracked what she was singing, and figured out what chords were kind of behind the melody she came up with, and threw down that like African mm-hmm. guitar arpeggio thing, and then kind of let the loop just play and play and play, and then the two singers you heard came up with their own verses. I think listening to it now, like I forgot actually in a way how striking it is, the different directions that each of those singers took it. The first singer. He's rapping in Arabic. He's, he is calling for peace, and he's calling for change. But he's also doing it in a way that's very much like I lift up my hand, like he says, like I'm a soldier, like I'm here to like for my brothers and my sisters. And he finds this really interesting balance, I think, of sharing a message that's at the same time like accessible to really anybody, including his potential, you know, perceived enemies, of like I'm ready to do things, I'm ready to work for peace, but at the same time he's saying like I'm a fighter for justice, like I'm here to stand up for my people and you know raise my hand with this power, and at the same time the next singer who's singing in Hebrew you know he is like it's full of this like these plays on words, and he's, you know, what he's a lot of what comes through is this idea of like, what is mine is yours, and really the spirit of like brotherhood that he really wants to convey of like we have to work together, and it's just fascinating to me. I think this is like what we hope to achieve in Heartbeat of creating a space for all opinions to be shared. Like we really, as long as they're not calling for violence, we really want them. We welcome those. And I think the both of them felt that this was a space for them to share what they believe was really I think, really important. Mm-hmm.
Well, podcast listeners, if you want to hear more of Heartbeat, where can they go, Aaron?
Well, we're on the web at www.heartbeat.fm and on Twitter at #HeartbeatAmp and on Facebook at Heartbeat Jerusalem.
Awesome, awesome.
Nice.
So what is a Heartbeat concert like? I mean, we're listening to this and the talent is so palpable. At the same time, these are musicians whose through in creating this, there's a relevant story. There's this critical consciousness that they're trying to raise. So what does that do in the concert setting, live performance? What kind of people come to a Heartbeat concert? Mm-hmm. And what happens at these concerts beyond, if anything, playing the music?
Well, we offer a few different kinds of live performance centered events. We've done a bunch of U.S. tours now, and we're planning now for our, I guess it'll be our sixth tour in the spring.
Nice.
And in the U.S. And the concerts that we do in the U.S. often are at universities, and those events, there's usually two components to it. And I think the ideal way to do it is actually to have like a community dialogue earlier in the day before the concert, where we can really engage with students or community members about the messages in the songs, about the experiences of the youth musicians, and really get into those issues in a deep way. And then at the concert, we really want music to lead. We really want the music itself to speak for itself.
Right.
But with that, we make sure that the musicians are sharing stories of where their songs are coming from, what the lyrics mean, especially if they're not in English. And try really to make sure that the critical elements and the messages that the musicians themselves want to be heard, that those are coming through alongside the music. And I think what generally happens is this: we see a range of emotions and like the energy that comes from these performances. You know, we get into the really deep and mournful and painful sides of the conflict, and the musicians' own experiences, and then also experience like the more uplifting, upbeat, hopeful side of their understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the event, at times we'll weave all those things together, where maybe we'll open up for some questions in the middle of the concert.
Right.
It depends on the venue. But also, as our musicians have gotten more professional, they've also now been invited to some more professional stages, which are really, where they're, I think, finally being seen as really high-quality professional musicians, not just as a novelty Israeli-Palestinian act. But like this last summer, we were in England at the WOMAD Festival, and they performed for well over 1,000 people there. And because this is a music festival, like, we had done workshops earlier in the day and got more into these issues, but at the concert itself, you know, the musicians got on stage and just brought this full power,
it's showtime.
And it was the first time, I think, really, that, I mean, they had the audience going crazy, just like crying and dancing and laughing. And it was like this, you know, after the concert, so many people came up to us afterwards and said this was the most meaningful thing that they've experienced the entire festival. That this had reshaped the way they think about things and given them new hope for the possibilities. I think that's it. I think what I'd like to see is that more of our musicians can engage with audiences in that professional music
mm-hmm.
arena. And the people can really listen to the music, and that through the music, the messages will really come through.
Yeah. Well, we're coming to the end of our show, but we have a couple more questions for you before we conclude it.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting that you brought up that they're really, you must be happy to see this progression in just the music itself.
Mm-hmm.
But they, like Bob Dylan, whether you believe him or not, purported to be just a song and dance man. They are not just that. And so I'm curious to see your reaction to this next question, which is, you alluded to it a little bit, but maybe you can get a little deeper in. How do you measure the impact of heartbeat? The monitoring and evaluation question.
Sure. What we focus on mostly is understanding what impact our programs are having on the participants themselves, on the musicians. So what we do, we do an entrance questionnaire. We do an exit at the end of the year questionnaire and essentially try to gauge how this experience throughout the course of the year has influenced their attitudes, their behaviors. And, you know, we also, of course, are, like, talking to the musicians as much as possible and trying to, like, interview them and do focus group kind of dialogue session,
right,
feedback sessions where we can understand what this experience means to them. And what we see really loudly and clearly is that the musicians are walking away, first of all, with this deep sense of empathy for one another and, the sense that they are aware, more critically, of the realities around them, that they're more aware of different narratives, that they're more aware of their own narrative, and I think more clear about their own identities.
Mm-hmm.
And that through music, they do feel that they gain musical skills, and that the music itself provides them a way to influence their communities, that they do feel they have this power and this responsibility to influence others. And I think one of the things that we're really trying now to do is to strengthen the ways that we measure the impact in our audiences, and especially the online audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone out there has some creative ideas how to use technology to do that, I think there's some really important work there.
Yeah, and actually, I was about to ask you the same thing. I mean, you've been doing this for 10 years now. Based on what you've learned, what advice do you have for others about working at the intersection of arts, media, and peace, and on how to measure impact?
I think one thing which I was skeptical to, especially about measuring impact, which I've come to really embrace, is the power of stories. I think the reality is we're not going to get hard scientific data, especially in the early stages of any project. And for a long time, I kind of dismissed anecdotes as, fluffy, or how could this possibly represent, you know, anything scientific or factual. But I think the truth is those stories are as concrete as any numbers or any other kind of hard data we could imagine. And especially, I think, in the peace-building world, we're still struggling to make the case for why our efforts are so desperately needed. And I think those stories are so powerful to capture people's imagination and to shift their understanding so that they can understand on a really personal level why these efforts are needed, why we have to invest in these, why the traditional approaches of just throw more money at the military budgets is really failing us, and that these approaches do have impacts. So I guess that's my advice, is really to embrace those stories and lift those up.
Fantastic. And then I think our final question, as I'm sure you're aware, Dylan, we'll go back to him to cap this off. He just won the Nobel Prize for Literature, and folks were surprised that a musician and songwriter was selected, I believe for the first time ever.
Wow.
This got us thinking about the Nobel Peace Prize, which, as far as I know, has never been given to a musician. I want you to imagine that 5 or 10 years from now, Heartbeat is awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. What do you hope Heartbeat will have achieved by then to warrant such a prize? Although I'm sure you'd be very humble in your acceptance speech.
I wouldn't be the one deserving of the speech. I think, if anything, it'd be like, you know, hopefully thousands of musicians by then who could come play a song together. That's a very, very humbling idea. I think our hope with Heartbeat is to bring this experience to really thousands more young people. I think there's a desperate need, obviously, in Israel and Palestine to create more equalizing spaces for young people to build this understanding and do something about it. And not just to let it sit in those, you know, nuclear dialogue circles, but really to embrace music's, in a way, unique ability to bring that to the wider community. I think we also need these kind of programs in every community on the planet, anywhere where we see inequality or discrimination. And while I certainly don't want to spread myself or Heartbeat too thin to try to be everywhere and nowhere at once, I would love for, you know, to be able to share what we're doing. Like, we're right now working on a curriculum that we hope can be a resource for other people in other communities to contextualize, you know, to their community and offer similar programs. And that's it. I think ultimately we need to build a critical mass of Israelis and Palestinians and people around the world who see each other as equals, who are embracing the reality that it's really not an Israeli versus Palestinian conflict, but it's kind of like a old story community versus the people who are ready for a new story conflict. To borrow some learning from a friend, Paul Costello. And I think through music, I would really love to see that by tapping into music's full power, that not only can we bring together thousands of young people to become part of the Heartbeat community, but that also they, as artists, can take the stage, can become leaders, cultural leaders in their communities, to bring these ideas, to bring these values really into the mainstream. And, you know, also, that's it. I think Nobel Prize or not, I think, I think the truth is there's so many projects and so much work that's happening that doesn't get seen by the Nobel Prize Committee. So I'm not too worried about the Nobel Prize
Beautiful,
Committee.
Yeah.
You've been listening to The Peace Frequency, a podcast series searching for ways to create a world free of violent conflict and finding them in the stories of people across the globe who are making peace possible. Our guest on today's show has been Aaron Schneier. He's the founder and executive director of Heartbeat, an organization that unites Israeli and Palestinian youth musicians to build critical understanding, develop creative nonviolent tools for social change, and amplify their voices to influence the world around them. You can learn more about Heartbeat and listen to their music at www.heartbeat.fm. And you can follow Heartbeat on Twitter at HeartbeatAmp. That's Heartbeat A-M-P. So, Aaron, thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much.
It was great, Aaron. Thanks.
And thanks to you, Nate, for co-hosting today's show with us.
My pleasure.
The Peace Frequency is produced by the Global Campus, USIP's online learning platform designed to teach and learn critical peace-building skills through distance learning, a growing multimedia library of peace-building resources, and virtual live events just like this one. You can learn more about the Global Campus at usipglobalcampus.org. Our sound engineer and theme music composer is Timothy O'Keefe. Our graphic designer is Manuel Leon. And I've been your host, Darren Cambridge. Thanks to our listeners for tuning in. Be sure to check the Peace Frequency website to access a recording of this show and other archived episodes of the podcast. The URL is usipglobalcampus.org/peace-frequency. Until next time, keep learning, supporting, and building peace.